And it is a good line, and it was a great way to describe him. He was a fighter. He was a hard worker who was always thoroughly prepared for everything he had to do. He was pompous and you know, sort of repetitive when he gave, when he was presiding at a meeting and making the formal statements and so forth, but he would develop kind of that the jargon of the presiding officer with all the appropriate harumphs and so forth thrown in. And he had a deep sort of stentorian voice which aided in that process. And like most people who were sort of big and solid as he was, stout, he had a way of being, even though he was quite short in stature, of presenting an imposing picture when he was presiding. And when we came to discuss cases and he told you where he stood on the case or how he felt about it, he didn't have to say it twice. He told you where he was coming from, and you marked him down on your book, and it went on from there because it wasn't going to change. He didn't have a lot of stomach for dialogue and you know, brainstorming or sort of committee of the whole gossip or conversation about things. It was either this or that, and that was all there was to it. I will jump ahead because I'm focusing on Tom Cavanaugh for a moment. I visited him in the hospital, I think, a day or two before he died. I remember that. And I remember telling him of my respect for him. And him expressing similar sentiments with respect to me. We were adversaries in so many ways, and on lots of issues. On some issues, we were on the same side. I found him to be a marvelous cohort in the ranks when you were fighting, and I know why. The Democrats loved him because he was a guy you wanted to have playing guard if you were playing tackle, you know, whatever. And he was a good, solid fighter. We were together on the procreate issue, as I recall, and some others on the court. And he was a good, tough fighter and thorough in his preparation. He was a good man. Not to say that he was right on a lot of things, or at least in my view. Well, that was the way I came to be elected Chief Justice. So it was a tenuous majority, quite unlike Ed Pagan's. I didn't hesitate to grab the brass ring, even though I could only see about a third of it and get a couple of fingers on it at one time. I set out as Chief Justice to, I suppose if I were going to say what was my agenda was to try to get the court to decide some cases. For one thing, I felt that we had too often filed multiple opinions where we weren't giving the bar guidance as to what the law was. And I really felt it was pointless for us to even take cases unless we were in a position to decide them with some authority. As a result, one of the things I did was I held up a lot of cases. I think if you were to look at the productivity of the years 69 and 70 when I was Chief Justice in terms of decisions by the court, it was down, and quite deliberately so. I simply wouldn't release opinions until I was sure that we had tried to hammer out an authoritative majority opinion, if it was at all possible. And if it wasn't possible, I tried to get the judges just to dismiss the case as improvidently granted leave. You know, what was the point in displaying to the bar that we were seven lawyers who couldn't agree what the law was, and add to our disagreement on the substantive issues our disapproval of each other by the words we were using in expressing our opinions. So I tried very hard to cull some of that stuff out of the books during my period in office. And the other thing that I did quite instinctively, and I don't think I intended to do it as Chief Justice. If you'd asked me what my goals were, I would have said my first goal was to get a raise for the justices, and my second goal was to try to do something about the way we wrote our opinions. But I did discover, I think in those years, that I had somewhat of a knack for innovative administration. And I enjoyed it. One of the first things I did with respect to the SOC Commission, for example, I employed an economist from Michigan State University to prepare a report and recommendation to the SOC Commission on behalf of the Supreme Court. And he came in with a big book about that thick. I don't know what it cost us, a couple thousand dollars or whatever for his work. But he had accumulated all the statistics of what lawyers make and what judges make and projected the economy and had done all and had done historically the relationship between salaries of judges and salaries of other people and so on, and did a wonderful job which resulted in our getting one of the largest raises we ever got. We went from $35,000 to $42,000, which was a 20% increase. And it was belated and I think much deserved, but nevertheless it was an accomplishment of my administration, I felt. We did some other things. We put the first black on the Board of Law Examiners a little before that. I'm not certain. But it was about that time Stuart Dunnings went on the Board of Law Examiners.